previously.
So Michelle is here to share her story, but I think that what you have to say is going to be really, really important to our listeners.
Finally, I worked up the nerve and told him that I couldn't have children, and if he wanted children, I understood if he didn't want to be with me anymore. And he said he loved me.
Because people were sensitive, I guess, yes, to how difficult that might be for you to be in that situation.
Yeah.
This is Beyond the Birds and Bees on Austin's Talk 1370.
Hi, this is Dr. Natalie Berger. I'm here with my colleague, Dr. Rinku Mehta. We are two physicians at Texas Fertility Center, and we're bringing you another edition of Beyond the Birds and Bees. And today is August 28th, Saturday, around 12:07 p.m., and it's a gorgeous day right now. I'm not sure what your feeling was when you walked out of the door this morning, Rinku, but it was so beautifully cool and wonderful, and I'm so excited that we're going to finally have a little bit of nicer weather now, even though the high still is around 98 degrees today, but certainly better than the 105 that we've been, reaching in recent days here, so it's looking like a very, very pretty day and a great day to get out there and have some fun. Before we get started on stuff, just a little bit of traffic to report. Apparently, there is an accident reported on Brody Lane at FM 1626. And then in Austin, an accident around Cesar Chavez after West 5th Street and 6th Street. So we are here on Talk Radio 1370 AM, and for anyone listening who has any questions about anything that we are currently talking about, or even questions about other things, feel free to give us a call at 390-1370, and we'd be happy to take your calls. So, starting off with some lighter stuff, I thought it would be interesting just to discuss briefly some of the people in the media who have been affected by fertility. And I'm not sure, if you have heard any stories per se or so, but it is something that's becoming more common to talk about in general. Like, infertility is not quite as taboo a subject as it used to be. And even though people have been more forthcoming recently, and actually there have been a number of celebrities in the media that have been stepping forward with their tales, there still certainly are details, important details, that are not necessarily relieved or revealed, I should say. But it's interesting because certainly you want to give these folks their privacy. You don't want to unnecessarily intrude upon their personal lives in a scenario where they already have so much of their personal life, on display. But it is interesting and I think helpful for people, especially who have not reached out to family or friends yet, and are, I think, sort of not happy to know, but comforted to know that they are not the only ones dealing with infertility.
Absolutely. And, the statistics, national statistics recently have said about one in six couples suffer from issues with fertility. And, but like you said, Natalie, since fertility is such a private issue, a lot of people don't really want to talk about it. And flipping through magazines, they're seeing these celebrities that are in their 40s, sometimes even the late 40s, getting pregnant with twins, their families are showcased on the magazine covers. And it's so great that now a lot of these celebrities are coming out and sharing their experiences. And a lot of them did not conceive naturally. They had to take advantage of technology such as in vitro fertilization, some even egg donation. But, putting it out there in the media, of course, takes a lot of courage because you're sharing something very private, but also gives people the message that, hey, you're not alone. There's mm-hmm. these other people. And at Texas Fertility Center, some of our patients have volunteered to share their fertility journeys. Like last week, we had Michelle, and we will be having a caller calling in this week to share her experiences. But, talking about it helps people feel more comfortable and makes them know that they're not unusual or an anomaly, that this is something very common.
Right. I think, even though that doesn't technically address the treatment aspect of infertility, but certainly to feel like you are not alone and that you are amongst other people who have your similar experience and who know what it's like to get well-meaning but difficult, quote, suggestions from family and friends. Like, you don't have to explain how awkward that is or how awkward it is to, you know, get invitation after invitation for baby shower and feel mixed in terms of wanting to go to support your family or friends, but then again being in a situation where you're being reminded of your fertility issues. And I think it's interesting to see some of the celebrities who've actually required and revealed the fact that they had fertility treatment. Like, for instance, Courtney Cox Arquette and her husband David, they actually went through apparently multiple IVF cycles and finally had a daughter. But she has mentioned that, you know, she thinks that IVF is a wonderful thing that people can do in this day and age, and she's luckily able to afford it. But, you know, we realize that, you know, and she does as well, too, that certainly in this day and age, you know, there are a lot of folks who are not able to afford even the more involved fertility treatments. The good thing is that a lot of people can be helped certainly by, you know, non-IVF things, but...
But Dr. Berger, wouldn't you agree that for many people, they will achieve success with much simpler treatments than IVF?
Right. And I think it's really important to remind, you know, everyone, including our listeners and such, that even though we do offer IVF as a treatment, the majority of what we do is actually not IVF. And so we're able to do other treatments, for instance, like surgical treatments for like lasering endometriosis or taking out polyps, or even, you know, much less expensive and invasive medical treatments involving things like Clomid or Femara, you know, with artificial insemination and such. So even though I think a lot of people think, oh, fertility treatment, IVF, you know, we definitely, even as a clinic, the majority of what we do is not IVF.
And there's a common misconception out there that all fertility treatments are expensive, that insurances won't cover their treatments. But, you know, many people have other reasons why they're infertile, maybe such as endometriosis, or they have large fibroids on their uterus, which are causing them symptoms, pain, and heavy bleeding. And a lot of those factors are really, yes, while they can cause infertility, they're also medical issues that need to be treated. And oftentimes these will be covered. And just the fact of treating these abnormalities may help improve a person's chance to getting pregnant. And, you know, as specialists and, you know, we always tell our referring physicians and the people in the community to spread the word that the patients need to know the complete story before they make a decision one way or the other. It's always a good idea to at least seek a consultation, get all the facts and all the information, and then decide if that's something that's right for you and the status of your finances and, you know, your family, your beliefs, if it's in your comfort zone to, you know, where do you draw the line, you know, if IVF is something that you would ever do if needed.
Right. And it's true that people come to us and, you know, typically we're able to offer multiple different options. In some scenarios, really, there may be a singular option that is the best fit from a medical standpoint. But we always try to, you know, give people the different, you know, potential options, the pros and cons of those options, realizing that some people may have philosophical or religious issues with some of our options, and that would not be a good fit for them. But very clearly, infertility treatment is not a one-size-fits-all treatment. It basically is very dependent upon the individual couple or people involved, and, you know, can certainly be swayed or altered by their own personal philosophies, financial issues as well too, or other things even beyond that. So, you know, typically we're able to offer a variety of treatments. But again, sometimes there may be really a certain focused treatment that may be the best fit. But we always want to give information because that's really the key to knowing what is the best decision for you. Because sometimes people will say, you know, I appreciate everything that you're saying. I hear you. None of these options, you know, appeal to me. And so in my scenario, I might choose to do something beyond fertility treatment. And that's certainly fine. That's, you know, we're trying to give, obviously, people the most information so they can make the best decision with their scenario.
Absolutely. And, you know, the key is to be comfortable with your decision for the patient and the spouse or the couple to come to an agreement in what they are comfortable together. And once you have that goal or that boundary, it's harder to accept whatever the outcome is. And, you know, you said, okay, I will go this far. And if it doesn't work, well, then I'm comfortable with the way things are. We have a great relationship that we'll focus on and move on. But, you know, setting those boundaries is extremely important to be able to look forward and not have your life consumed by one factor of maybe not being able to have children. But majority of the people, one way or the other, if they're willing to go the distance, if that's right for them, do end up conceiving, mm-hmm. or many of our patients do end up adopting. But, you know,
I think it's a really important comment in terms of sort of setting a set of boundaries, or even if they're not like permanent, but it's sort of an idea as to what you and your partner may be feeling comfortable with. So you're not making decisions in isolation, sort of wondering, you know, what he or she may be thinking as well, too. But having an idea as to what you feel comfortable with and working with your physician, whether it be with Texas Fertility or with your OBGYN or whoever else you're seeing, but having an idea as to, okay, if this is not working within a certain period of time, then we need to have sort of a next step or a next, you know, decision. Because it can be especially hard to be caught in this endless cycle of fertility treatments, not feeling you're getting anywhere, not knowing, you know, sort of what is the next best step. And that sometimes is a set of decisions that doesn't come up immediately. Like sometimes it does take a little time to sort of figure out, okay, what are our boundaries? But, you know, to realize also it's not uncommon for men and women to look at things differently. And it can be very common for couples as they're going through this fertility evaluation and treatment process to sometimes start diverging in terms of their thoughts and ideas and comfort levels with what's going on. So as much as it's possible to maintain communication with your partner, and sometimes that can be helped out with, you know, even talking to a counselor or a third party to help the two of you sort of construct a uniform or a sort of consensus opinion so that both of you, again, are comfortable with where things are leading.
Absolutely. And, you know, fertility treatments can be extremely stressful because, of course, it's an emotional roller coaster. And sometimes the men may have less of a difficult time dealing with it than the women. Women, as by nature, we are emotional creatures. But there is also help out there. There are support groups. There are family counselors and counselors that specialize in dealing with couples suffering from infertility. And it's always okay to go ahead and seek out help if you feel like you need it. Because, again, the most important thing is your relationship. Yes, it is important to bring a child. You have envisioned yourself with a child, but not at the expense of your relationship with your spouse.
In terms of the different, you know, support groups available, well, some people find a support community on the web, which can be a nice way of anonymously, I can't even mention that word, but, you know, secretly, basically, without revealing your name or your situation, getting support, you know, on the internet and feeling like you are getting, you know, having a bond with other folks in your scenario that way. In other scenarios, people may want to have more of a sort of in-person support group, and there are a few different options actually in the Austin area. There is a group called Resolve, which is a part of a national fertility support group society, and I believe their website, I think, is resolve.org.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We also do have a support group affiliated with Texas Fertility Center, just for folks who are dealing with fertility problems as well, too. And if you look on our website at txfertility.com, you'd be able to get more information about that support group. And that's something that if you had any questions about, you can always call the main number to TFC. So there are some different, you know, options there available.
And the one thing that I will say about support groups on the internet, I think a lot of them can be great where people are sharing their experiences. But I would caution against taking advice from people based on what you read on the web, because things are very subjective. What is one person's experience or what works for them may not necessarily work for another person. I am on the experts panel on a support group in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and sometimes I see women giving each other advice that makes me want to scream.
This is not the right treatment.
So, you know, I try to refrain as much as possible from interjecting, because these are, you know, women talking to each other unless they ask me a question. But sometimes it's just, I can't help myself. I have to interject. But, right. You know, just an example that, you know, a word of caution of what you hear from other people as advice.
Gotcha. And so we're going to be wrapping up this first little segment here shortly. And we actually have a caller on the line that we're going to be talking to in the next segment. My name is Supan. And we'll be talking to her about her sort of history and sort of what her experience has been and getting some more details that way. But again, we are on Talk Radio 1370 AM. Our number is 390-1370. And this is Beyond the Birds and Bees.
Welcome back to Beyond the Birds and Bees on Austin's Talk 1370.
Hey, this is Natalie Berger. I'm here with my partner Rinku Mehta, and we are two physicians at Texas Fertility Center talking today about all the odds and ends of fertility and infertility. And we had a caller calling in, Supan. And Supan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Great. Well, thank you so much for calling in.
Sure.
And we basically wanted to hear a little bit more about your journey through infertility and fertility treatment per se, and certainly, you know, share with the call, or the listeners, you know, what you feel comfortable. But please tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Sure. So I have been seeking fertility treatment about two and a half years, I guess. We had gotten pregnant on our own almost 3 years to the month ago, but lost it at 3.5 months. And since then, we, you know, weren't able to get pregnant on our own. So, you know, we went to a fertility specialist and started that process and did a few, you know, Clomid cycles with IUI and then, you know, injectables with IUI. And obviously, that was not working. So we also did a laparoscopy on me as well, and discovered that I had endometriosis at stage 3, which was removed. And then we did another IUI with injectables. I did become pregnant again, but they discovered that every time they do the ultrasound that there was not a fetal pole growing. So at 9 weeks, they had to do a DNC, and then it's just been a 2.5 year process of treatments and breaks and surgeries and, you know, different kinds of things, and emotionally draining for both my husband and I. But we know that it'll happen when it's supposed to happen. And, you know, but the frustrating part about it is that we've done every single test you can think of on both of us to see if there is any issues. And nothing has been discovered. And
so, Pam, can I interject for a minute and just ask you just a little bit more detail about your laparoscopy? So, I'm guessing that was done. So, I'm guessing it was done because you weren't successfully pregnant with more conservative treatments like the Clomid and the IUI.
Correct.
Were you having any symptoms of pain with your periods or pelvic pain at other times?
I was. I was having, you know, the younger you are, the less issues that you're going to have with endometriosis that I have experienced. But I didn't have really bad cramps up until about maybe, you know, 4 years ago, and I would never thought, you know, endometriosis might be the cause of that. And so when he asked if we could do a lap on me, I said, sure. And he didn't think that there was going to be anything found either, and there was. And then afterwards, when I did have a period, I didn't have any cramps or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, that's so common that we hear this. And, you know, laparoscopy is one of the diagnostic tools and treatment tools for endometriosis and in women or couples with otherwise unexplained infertility, where all the other tests have come back normal and we're scratching our heads, well, why aren't you getting pregnant? And in a certain subset of those women, they will have endometriosis. And there's a lot of literature that endometriosis can decrease your chances of getting pregnant with, you know, non-IVF methods and natural conception.
Right.
And many women don't even have any symptoms. Some, like you, do have the cramps during your period, and women kind of think, oh, well, this is just normal. I always have cramps. And, you know,
right,
you're supposed to have a lot of cramps during your period.
Right.
But that's not necessarily always the case. And sometimes we find surprises, like in your case, endometriosis, and
yeah,
sometimes treating it helps, and sometimes you still have to move on to, you know, additional treatments.
Right, which we did, and I forgot to mention that, but we actually just did, I did an IVF last year, the middle of last year, obviously wasn't successful, and then we just did one about 3 months ago, which I actually responded a lot better, and, you know, went to a 5-day transfer, had 2 really good blasts, and it just, I don't know why it didn't take or what, but we really felt good about it, and and we weren't successful. So I'm, you know, after being on injections and Clomid, you tend to gain weight. And I think in the 2.5 years that I've actually been on some sort of, you know, medication, I've gained probably about 30 pounds.
Wow.
Which, yeah.
Well, you know, that's really interesting that you brought that up.
Right?
Yeah. You know, Dr. Berger and I were just discussing that, you know, we should probably at some point also talk about weight and infertility.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
it's very fortuitous that you actually brought that up. But,
yeah,
you know, it's kind of very difficult to say whether it's really the medications themselves, because they have a short half-life and they're eliminated from your system. But,
right,
you know, possibly also just the stress of going through all the fertility is probably more the culprit. You don't really then pay that much attention to what you're eating, or you know, exercise kind of goes out the window,
right,
because you're just so busy coming to the
and
clinic.
And you're scared. That was my issue, is being scared to work out when I was actually on my treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, you know, because you're so stimulated, you know, your ovaries are a lot bigger and feel heavier. And you feel like if you do anything too rough on your body, that something is going to explode. That's how I felt when I would. And that's why I wouldn't go to the gym as much, because I went to the gym a lot before, but I would say, oh, I don't want to go while we're trying the cycle because I don't want to ruin anything. And
right,
I think that's a lot of misconception with women, too, is that they feel like, and I know that you'll probably say that I'm wrong, but, you know, after you have, like, an IUI or an IUI, like, 3 days later, if you wanted to go to the gym and do sit-ups, is that okay? You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You need to take it easy. You know, I don't know.
I'm going to pull out my carpet analogy of the uterus. So the lining of the uterus, I kind of liken it to the fibers of, you know, thick carpet with lots of fibers in it. And
uh-huh,
when you do an IUI and the sperm is up there at the top of the uterus, it's not falling out. It's up there. And it's well, you know, protected and you know, varies quickly within a few seconds. Sperm makes it into the tubes, and there are a lot of little nooks and crevices that it can hide in, waiting for the sperm. So, you know, we have patients lie down for about 10 minutes after their IUI.
Right. Right.
And then we say, you know, go do whatever it is that you normally do. You know, when people are, their ovaries are stimulated and heavy and bigger than usual, not a good idea to do high impact things or go jump on a trampoline or anything like that. But
right,
your routine activities you can certainly do, and even exercise, as long as it's not high impact. And,
okay,
you know, ideally limit it to about 45 minutes to an hour. Stay well hydrated, and don't pick up anything that your body is not used to. So I wouldn't start a, you know, brand new workout regimen that you're not used to. But certainly fertility treatments are not exclusive of taking care of yourself and, you know, making sure that you're healthy and continue your good nutrition and continue your
right,
exercise routine.
And actually, I wanted to ask you, Sifan, because you brought up, you know,
yeah,
some very helpful information, I think, especially for people who are still going through the fertility treatment journey and haven't
mm-hmm,
gotten to the goal quite yet. But looking back, you know, based upon like what you know now, do you have any suggestions or advice for people who are just starting, things that you may have wanted to know about or somebody tell you when you were starting this process?
Well, I think that it's really, really important to be educated and to find a support group, like you guys were just talking about, find people that have experienced infertility. And it's funny because before we started this process, I didn't know anybody mm-hmm. that had done any kind of fertility treatment whatsoever. But when you come out and say, hey, we're seeing a specialist and blah, 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 all these people seem to come out of the woodwork. Right. You'd be so surprised because a lot of people don't like to just, you know, come out and talk about it. But, you know, when somebody is going through it, that you didn't know, they seem to come out and say, oh, hey, we did this and that. And it's very helpful to kind of get advice and figure out, like, what the steps are, what's going to happen, what to do. You know, you get all these funny things like eat pineapple or, mm-hmm. you know, people give certain advice that you think is a little bit off the wall. But it's I have found it extremely, extremely helpful to find that someone or a group mm-hmm. to go to and to get information and to be educated about it. And there's not, as I look back, there's not really anything that I wish that I would have done differently, because I just feel like I've been going through the motions and just listening to the doctors. And the important thing is to listen to the doctors, because mm-hmm. obviously they know the best. So don't try to question them. Don't try to, you know, think that, oh, well, what they're saying, this other person told me, well, they're not a doctor. So listen mm-hmm. to your doctor. And
it's always okay to ask us, you know, questions. That's yeah. what we're here for. You know, we
right.
want you to be fully informed and educated about the choices that you're making and about your treatment. So it's always okay to ask questions. And, you know, sometimes patients, of course, get caught up in their emotions and
mm-hmm.
Kind of can't see that far ahead. And
right.
as physicians, we kind of have to, you know, show you the big picture. And, you know, if your physician feels that, you know, we've done everything, but this is not going to happen the way we want to, then
right.
they will present you with other options. But
but
it's always okay to completely, you know, be in sync with your doctor and talk to them about whatever fears or questions that that you have.
Oh, yes. I did that quite often.
Gotcha.
I feel like I'm really educated because I've done everything and anything to keep myself informed. I feel like I could be a fertility nurse.
Well, it's true. It's funny that you bring that up because, you know, we have some great fertility nurses here in
yes,
our clinic,
you do.
Both
yeah.
clinical and IVF. And they really end up, you know, being a major support person in the whole team. And so we are fortunate to have them and have them working with our patients. But
they have been, like, I have really become friends with one of the nurses there. She has been amazing and become one of my friends through this process because mm-hmm. she's just been very supportive and very caring and just, you know, you have a wonderful group over there. So it's very amazing.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's such a personal thing. And, you know, it can be honestly hard to talk to a lot of people in your life who otherwise don't understand. And so when you have the nurses who are sort of the person working with the physician who can, you know, spend the time and answer the questions and understand where you're coming from. And again, you don't have to reinvent the wheel when you're trying to explain your concerns and questions and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It can be really helpful. So,
Supan, what's next for you?
Well, actually, I am on it. We took a break after the IVF. I just basically threw up my hands and said, I cannot do this. But, you know, my biological clock is ticking, which I feel. I just turned 36 in May, and my husband is an only child, and, you know, adoption's kind of out there, but, you know, there's nothing there yet that is saying that we cannot get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted to do something this cycle instead of not doing anything and just trying naturally. He wanted to say, okay, let's do, you know, at least do a Clomid until we can figure out if we need to do another in vitro or not. So
mm-hmm.
I'm on a Clomid cycle right now. And we're just going to try naturally. We're not going to do an IUI. We're going to just mm-hmm. try naturally and see what happens.
Well, you know, sometimes people just go out and get pregnant on their own after they failed all sorts of fertility treatments. We don't know how that happens or, you know, how the stars lined up in the right way, but it happens.
It's interesting, because as providers, you think you have everything, as much information as we have. You think you have the whole picture in front of you and... You know, it is always interesting and certainly exciting to have things happen on their own sometimes without any kind of treatment.
Exactly. But, and that's what I was going to ask you guys is, some of the tests that we had been, for me, as far as being a 36-year-old woman and having the, I guess, is it called FSH, where they do the reserve and the quality of eggs, is that correct?
FSH is a measure of the sort of the quantity of eggs.
Quality
is very much dependent on a woman's age.
Okay. So is there anything that you can test for that as far as like the quality of the egg? Is there something? Because I thought that we had done that, but I might have been wrong.
Unfortunately, not. Quality, we don't have any kind of objective measures to assess quality. We can assume that in a 40-year-old woman, the quality will be worse than in a 36-year-old woman and then in a 20-year-old. But when we do IVF and we examine the eggs under the microscope, that's when we can assess the quality that, hey, you know, you're 36, however, your eggs are great quality or poor quality based on the way they look. However, that being said, based on the way they look, we cannot diagnose any kind of genetic abnormalities. So,
Because I know that there's a new thing out right now that you can do as far as genetic testing with the swab in the mouth. Is that correct?
Right. But that's for you, not for the actual embryos. In order to do genetic testing on an embryo, we would have to take a cell out. And, you know, we only recommend it if it's really needed because some studies have shown that it may decrease implantation potential.
Right.
So if somebody doesn't really need it, we don't, you know, really recommend that. But unfortunately, there are no other quality measures. Dr. Berger, do you have any?
Right. In terms, you know, there's some blood testing, you know, again, that we do on the day three, including the FSH as well as estradiol, because you really want to check those two things together.
Right.
And in some scenarios, some physicians may want to add on another hormone test called inhibin B. But And AMH is another blood test that might be added on. But classically, FSH and estradiol are the most common things that we use as a clinic. And it's true that, you know, the IVF cycle certainly gives us the best possibility of looking at the quality of the eggs. And as Rinku was mentioning, you know, we can, in certain scenarios, biopsy the fertilized eggs to see what the chromosomal makeup is or the normalcy.
Is that the PGD?
Correct. It's actually a slight variation. It's called PGS, which is pre-implantation genetic screening. It means that we are not looking for a specific problem, but we're screening the embryos for a abnormality in the number of chromosomes that they have. And it's something that you would certainly want to talk to your doctor about, you know, it being an appropriate treatment for you or not, because it's going to vary in terms of your scenario. And even with, you know, physician differences in terms of how they feel about this technology. But it certainly is an exciting technology to be able to offer in some scenarios.
So since I've had to IVF, and every time the quality of the actual embryo has been really good, would that determine, if I'm hearing you right, that is meaning that my eggs are in good quality, or
as far as we can tell by that visual information, and we know that up until recently that was all that we had to go by was how embryos physically looked. We know there are going to be some scenarios where you can have pretty embryos, but the embryos themselves may not be genetically normal even, and some embryos may not look pretty but be totally genetically normal. So even though there tends to be an association between pretty embryos and good quality embryos, occasionally there can be a little bit of a mismatch.
Right.
But it's true. I would talk to your physician about, you know, again, if this is something that he or she would be recommending for a future IVF cycle.
And sometimes it's the receptivity of the uterus, or if, you know, if there's endometrial polyp or something, and, you know, this is just generally speaking, it may not be the embryo. It may be the lining, which is not receptive. So, you know, there are so many nuances that have to be just right for a cycle to succeed.
It's crazy. Everything has to be aligned perfectly.
Right. But the good news is that, people who are otherwise not in a poor prognostic category for various reasons, you know, most of them, if they stick with it, will end up getting pregnant. I've had patients of my own with really poor prognosis that have ended up getting pregnant. I have one patient, this is like the only patient I've ever had, who's done 5 IVF cycles, and she got pregnant in her 5th cycle.
That's, I mean, we're not going to give up. That's the thing, is to not give up. I mean, and also, you know, I'm glad that I could call in today, because I feel like that there are so many women out there that don't know who to talk to and don't know what to do, that, you know, to be in a support group or to have somebody that you can talk to about it will help, because you cannot just do this on your own. And yes, your husband is there, but he doesn't understand on a woman's side of things, because we're the ones physically going through, you know, each cycle and being poked and prodded and gaining the weight, blah, blah, blah. I mean, the husband can be there emotionally, but physically it's really draining. Just from my experience, it's just like, there's got to be some sort of limit to what I can do, and not feel the pressure also, too, from the other side of the family or your family. You know, you need to get pregnant, you need to get pregnant, you need to get pregnant. Well,
you're like, we're trying, we're working on it.
Exactly. So, yeah. You know, there's a lot of variables, but the most important part, I think, is to have somebody to talk to and an outreach person that will be there for you.
Gotcha. Well, thank you so much, Sifan, for calling in.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
We really appreciate it.
And we wish you luck.
Yes.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Okay. And we're going to be back in just a few moments with our last segment.
Welcome back to Beyond the Birds and Bees on Austin's Talk 1370.
Hey, this is Natalie Berger and Rinku Mehta again of Texas Fertility Center. And we are starting to round things up here on our Beyond the Birds show. But we wanted to talk a little bit more about something that our caller brought up, which was weight and fertility in perspective. And Rinku, I know that you have a personal sort of interest in this specifically, and tell us a little bit more about your feelings and perspectives on weight and fertility.
Natalie, of course, lately there is an obesity epidemic, and more data is coming out in the literature about the impact of obesity and being overweight on fertility. There are studies that have shown that being overweight can decrease your chances of getting pregnant, even naturally or with fertility treatments, by about 30%, which is huge.
Impressive. And it's true that a lot of folks, especially when they go through all the fertility testing and stuff, and especially in cases where we have sort of unexplained fertility, and they're like, what can we do? We don't smoke. We, you know, drink in moderation. We have caffeine in moderation. You know, what else can we do? And it's true, if I have a scenario where somebody is carrying extra weight, and one measure to look at someone in terms of their weight is to do something called a body mass index calculation, which is basically something that you look at to figure out if you take your height and your weight and put it into a little formula, are you in the normal range for your height with regards to your weight, or are you carrying extra weight, or in some cases are you carrying too little weight? And there's actually something called a BMI or body mass index calculator. If you go to Google and just type in BMI calculator, you can get a sense as to where you fall. Are you in a normal weight range, or are you carrying extra weight? And especially over a BMI of 30, yes, there is more information that you can be adversely affecting your fertility, whether it be spontaneously or with fertility treatment. And that measures that you do to normalize your weight, even if it's not getting below 30, but even small changes in your weight can make a big difference.
Yeah, you know, even studies have shown that a 5 to 10% decrease in your current body weight can significantly improve some of the metabolic abnormalities that increased weight and the extra fat cells create in a woman's body. And not only does extra weight cause one to have difficulties in getting pregnant, but also there's a higher risk of miscarriage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, weight is such a touchy topic that many of us as physicians are kind of almost afraid to even broach that subject, afraid that the patient's going to be mad at us for right. pointing that out, that, you know, I already know this. I've already gone through, you know, diets and I've already done this. But, you know, we still have to have that conversation.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's important to realize, even if you've seen another physician recently, like your primary care provider or your OBGYN, and they didn't make mention about it, it's not something that we should totally ignore. And again, it's something that you can figure out on your own, taking your height and your weight and plugging it into this little formula that you can find on the internet very easily. It's also important to know that, you know, people who carry extra weight sometimes have irregular periods, but not all people who have extra weight have regular periods. They may have very regular periods. And so even those folks who have regular periods but carry extra weight may have some impact on their fertility. And I think it's really important also to, like you were mentioning, to keep focus on the fact that, well, you may not be achieving your, you know, size 8 status, but in terms of making the right direction, going the right direction with weight loss, that can make a profound difference on your fertility.
And, you know, weight loss, of course, people say, well, I tried the Atkins diet, or I tried this, or I tried that. But the important thing is you have to adopt a strategy that's going to last you a lifetime. It can't be a fad diet. You've got to change the way you eat on a daily basis. And, you know, exercising is fantastic. It's important. But the real thing that's going to get someone there with weight loss is caloric restriction. And it doesn't have to be severe. Even, you know, restricting calories to 1,500 to 1,700 calories if your body needs 2,000 will mm-hmm. help the weight loss.
Yeah, it's true. I actually talked to a trainer, you know, this past week who was saying, you know, in terms of weight loss, it's 70% what you eat and maybe 20 to 30% of, you know, doing some cardiovascular or maybe some weight bearing exercise. But really, the focus, you really need to focus on what is being ingested or eaten. Because no matter how much you work out, if you're taking in too many calories, you are going to be hitting your head against the wall in terms of weight loss.
Yeah. And now, you know, it's so much easier than before to count calories because all, you know, products, packaged products at least, have nutritional labeling. So you can, you know, exactly what the serving size of the cereal you're eating and how much you should eat. And of course, if you decide, well, I don't want to eat my calories in one tablespoon of sugar, I'd rather spread it out. Mm-hmm. You can eat more and still be at the same calorie level. So I guess, you know, avoiding calorie dense mm-hmm. things with high fat and high sugar can take you a long way. Drink water instead of sodas. Mm-hmm. You know, that take you a long way.
Yeah, it's interesting how just making that kind of switch, like going from soda to diet soda or soda to water, can make a big difference in some people's, you know, scenarios. And if you have any questions about it, certainly there are nutritionists in the area, and actually some nutritionists who specialize in fertility nutrition who can also guide you in terms of, you know, good food choices. It's true that a lot of folks know they need to eat less, but sometimes they don't know exactly how to do that or how to make themselves maintain their sanity while they're doing so. But I guess, you know, what I also would want to emphasize is this is something that you have actually some control over versus some of the fertility things otherwise you don't have any control over. So I'd want this to be sort of an empowering thing rather than be like, oh, this is frustrating. Yet another person's telling me that I need to lose weight. But this is something that you can work with in unison with what we are doing to maximize your chances for fertility treatment to be successful. And so it's a combined effort. And again, it's something that, you know, can really optimize what we're doing on the other end.
I completely agree. Exactly what she said.
Yeah, and it's true. You know, in later segments and stuff, later shows, I should say, you know, we talk a little bit more in detail about some of the things that are available for people, especially if they have more than just 5 to 10 pounds to lose, but are looking at larger needs for weight loss. And also talk a little bit about, you know, the fact that some people are actually going to be underweight and may benefit from some normalization by increasing their weight. So that's something that we will save for a future show. But at this point, we will be starting to wrap up. It's been great in terms of talking to you guys about, you know, fertility stuff and such. And again, this is Beyond the Birds and Bees, and we are Natalie Berger and Rinku Mehta. Next week, we will be talking about fibroids and, you know, what are they? Why would they affect me? Are they just a fertility problem, or can they cause other problems as well, too? So we look forward to see you again next week on Beyond the Birds and Bees.
Great being here.
Thanks. The moon up above, and a thing called